I'm Coulter DeVries, owner of Ranch Investor Advisory and Brokerage Services. I'm an accredited land consultant with the Realtor Land Institute and proud member of ASFMRA.
The Ranch Investor Podcast is the most downloaded and informative industry-specific content that intrigues while entertains.
Coulter, good morning.
Arnoux, how are you?
I'm well. I love the hat.
Well, thank you. I'll have to send you one.
Well, I'd be proud to wear it.
Well, thanks for coming on.
With great pleasure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay,
I'm digging your background there.
Well, it's not.
The thing over your right shoulder.
Yeah. I actually got that on my family's place.
Did you?
Yeah, and the funny story about that is, I was 15, I think, and we had a landowner's tag.
Yeah.
And I'm from Red Lodge, so the Beartooth Mountains, big, big plateau. And a lot of my friends and peers, they have these adventure stories of packing miles into the mountain with a string of horses and mules, and they'll get an elk down. And
I've done it. Snowstorm
will come, and they're risking their life, and a grizzly bear might be after their kill, and they just have this Shakespearean odyssey. They have this adventure story, and I'm like, well, I drove 2 miles from my parents' house, shot that one in the pasture on our place, went home and got the tractor, and then came back out and loaded it up.
Listen, I'm sure you're not short of stories also where you've had to put in a lot of grit and effort. So but I know that's hard work. Yeah, lucky to have a backhoe. Backhoes can be helpful more than one way. Yeah. Cheers. Well,
Arnoux, thank you for coming on to tell us a little bit about MAST and Drone Seed. So I don't know if you have any disclosures to give. I have a disclosure just given our audience. I know that you've received funding to the sum of maybe $46 million, and some of that has come from Davos. And some of my listeners or you were featured at Davos, I believe. You're gonna have to correct me. Correct my understanding, but what I'm getting at as a disclosure for me is my audience might take exception to the idea or notion that I am shilling for the global elites and their beliefs around climate change and global warming. I'm not having you on, Arnoux, to promote or pitch Davos's solutions to climate change, global warming. I see what you're doing with MAST and Drone Seed as a tool in the toolbox for landowners. And whether people like it or not, the potential for carbon markets that are not voluntary, maybe not compulsory, but maybe something a little more regulated and structured, I personally think that potential is high. And I kind of want to be on the front end of that. And I want my listeners to be on the front end of understanding some of the options they have. A lot of brokers, appraisers, real estate agents, ranchers, progressive ranchers. So I think we do have a lot of ranching for profit minded listeners who would be receptive to saying, you know, I might not like it and where it's come from, or maybe even who's backed it, but I want to not get left behind. I want to see what this is all about. It's a tool that could bring value and be life-changing money. It could change my family tree. So, I just want to make that disclosure, Arnoux, and I'm sure that it's not the first time you've received a little pushback from us populist nationalist flyover state rural ranchers.
Well, we started our conversation talking about elk hunting, so I think you should get a sense for how I feel about our Western way of life. You'll obviously gauge from my accent that I'm not originally from this country, but I am a proud American. I have two, this country has given much to me, including two sons who also enjoy our Western way of life. We do not have money from Davos. Davos, of course, is an event in Switzerland that where the global elite policymakers included come together to talk about, you know, the big problems before us globally. I've never been, but I'm sure it's an interesting conversation that's had. We do have money from venture capitalists. We do have money from venture capitalists that are climate minded, who've made money in other industries, but want to, they want their legacy to be having made an impact on Western landscapes. Whether or not you agree or we agree about what may or may not be causing climate change, at the end of the day, the trajectory that we're on is wholly unsustainable. We've lost 17.1 million acres to catastrophic wildfire in the West United States in the last decade alone. People's lives and livelihoods and communities are being decimated in the path of this of destruction, and we're looking to fill a gap and needing to scale reforestation solutions. So, Chair, yeah, you said it exactly right. The need for scale and the need to make an impact. I think, you know, like, too often across the West, and we see our lifestyle impacted by outside influences, some of them good, some of them not. We see landowners forced to subdivide their ranches for generation transitional reasons. We see rangelands intersected by infrastructure. We see communities suffer from the loss of capital not being invested anymore into things like the timber industry and the impact that has on a socioeconomic basis. So I very much hope that our program can help make a difference by conserving landscapes and habitat and ecosystems and that Western way of life that we cherish, and as well as create a market-driven impetus for renewed investments into our Western landscape. So, yeah, hopefully that answers any needed disclosures. But I think we're talking the same language.
Well, thank you for opening with that, Arnu. Now let's get into what is MAST. What is MAST? And then tell me about this case study where you and I have a little bit of commonality. There's a fire, a burn scar on a ranch I sold, a small one, in Cascade, Central Montana. So I know directly of a project that you have been on. What is MAST? What are you looking for? And how can you benefit our audience, landowners, brokers? What is MAST and drone seed? Why are you on?
Yeah, it's a small world, isn't it? And White Falls, Sulphur Springs is a beautiful place, sadly affected by fire to the east and to the west. So MAST was actually, and you mentioned Drone Seed, was the predecessor company. Drone Seed was created in, was founded in 2016 with some backing from venture capitalists, as really proud of making continued investments in innovation to drive efficiencies in the reforestation supply chain. Started out as an aerial herbicide company, spraying for competing vegetation after wildfire, but also after harvest, after clear cuts. We're very much pro timber. We invested then into further into the supply chain by acquiring a company called Silver Seed in Washington, 133-year-old company that is really the premier supplier of conifer reforestation seed globally. Has the largest seed extractory in the Western United States, and really moving the needle on on Cone Collections, which we can chat about later, perhaps, then acquired a company called CalForest, a company that I used to run, a premier independent, now on a consolidated basis, largest reforestation container stock producer in the Western United States. And then we've fully consolidated, fully vertically integrated, site prep, reforestation activities on the ground, as well as capital market solutions. So all of those things coming together mean that we're able to move very quickly after fire. In fact, for Cone Collections, often we're collecting during active wildfires, right, to preserve that genetic seed stock that's at risk of burning. And then, yeah, we engage with landowners affected by fire and who are often, you know, lost. I mean, I can't tell you how many times when I ran CalForest, that nursery business, how many phone calls I had from landowners who'd lost their grandfather's forest, you know, and they were hoping to harvest that forest to maybe send their grandkids to university, and had very few options before them. So they had to, you know, if they didn't have a consulting forester, they didn't know where to find one. They didn't have seed more often than not. That country that you just mentioned, north of where you are in White Sulphur Springs, you know, there was no seed for reforestation after catastrophic wildfire until an effort that we undertook with the Montana Department of Natural Resources Conservation and the Bureau of Land Management in a first of its kind partnership last summer, where we collected cone seed for reforestation to help folks out, and as a consequence, I think increased seed available for Montana lands by 10 or 15%. So anyway, so then we work with the landowner to understand what the forest looked like before fire. We make a detailed assessment of through stratifying the landscape and developing a mosaic of what the forest would look like, and then develop a reforestation prescription that includes site prep, so the removal of as much of that burnt material as possible, that biomass, and then developing a reforestation prescription thereafter. So, you know, seed and seedlings, and then provide the capital to pay for all of it.
And we're talking wild, native, intact, once intact forests that have been burned out. So you can't come in and do a plantation with me, right? If I'm in the panhandle of Texas and it's just flat and windy and low precip area, you're not going to come in and just plant a bunch of fast growing, well, there's nothing that's probably fast growing in the panhandle of Texas, but you're not going to just come in and plant a bunch of species. You're looking for native areas. You're getting seeds from that locality. You can't just bring in conifers from Washington, Oregon, and California to Colorado and Montana and Idaho. It has to be very localized, and it has to be part of a kind of a regenerative program. Is that right?
Yeah, so we are able to migrate seed, you know, a certain distance, but not as far as you might think. Certainly not from Washington to the Panhandle of Texas. So we harvest seed from forests that haven't burnt. We process that seed. We store it for decades, and then use that seed, as I said, either provide it for the timber industry, or in the case of wildfires, generally speaking, that seed goes to within 500 foot elevation of where it was originally collected, within a specific broad seed zone.
That is very specific, within 500 feet of elevation to match suitability of the climate and the ecosystem. Now,
yeah, so we're seeing forests, you know, because of changing landscapes, right? Not to say climate change. We see forest ecosystems changing. We're seeing those lower elevation pine plantations that may have at some point held Douglas fir in certain places convert to oak woodland or brush. And so we have to be mindful of that and you know, plant more pine than we would fir. But we wouldn't, we're not in the, we want to build resilient forests that will grow for generations and thrive.
Well, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but it's just, it is a burning question. How about last time you and I spoke, we talked about north of Billings, Roundup, Bull Mountains, a fire. There's a burn scar from probably 30 years ago, maybe 35, as old as I am. And it has never come back. And you know, you had mentioned that it probably burned so hot that it just sterilized the soil, killed any viable seed that was on the ground, in the ground. Is that a burn scar, a 3-decade-old burn scar that you could rehabilitate?
Yes. The short answer is yes. And we can also intervene in the case of beetle kills. What we define as a disturbance can include beetle kill and fire. But yes, there needs to have been a forest in the past. And you're quite right. You know, like too many times. Yesterday, I was driving down through the Sierra Nevadas within the Dixie fire footprint of a fire that burnt nearly 1 million acres. I mean, right? Like, just the level of devastation is truly catastrophic. There's country that I drove through that will, including that fire, that will never see forest again, because there hasn't been, you know, because we haven't made an investment into a sufficient amount of seed collection, and because fires are burning at such severity that, as you say, they're burning that O layer, that top layer of soil that has a natural seed bed in it. The only thing that comes back is brush. And so we're seeing the conversion of forests into brush fields, which is terrible, right? Which is terrible environmentally. It's terrible for habitat, for deer and elk. It's, for watersheds, for cutthroat trout, salmon runs. It's devastating all around.
Now, if I just tuned in, had no background frame of reference to mast or drone seed, I would, at this point in the podcast, our new, I'd be thinking, dang, this sounds pretty good. You're going to come in, you're going to not only clean up the fire damage, but you're going to reseed it. And I'm just going to guess that mast is at that point, you guys are in it for 8, 9, 12 bucks an acre, maybe 16 bucks an acre is your investment into it. That's, wow, that sounds pretty good. You guys come in and improve my place. The deal is, though, is that you guys are taking the risk for a future carbon market that is at this point voluntary, right? So you're going to reseed it, and you're going to have the opportunity to market any carbon credits in the future. Is that right?
So that's correct. The first thing I'll say is, the cost of undertaking reforestation end to end, from site prep as much as the budgets will afford us, right? So if we can't remove the material, we'll fell trees across the face of a mountain to help with soil erosion, for example, right? But the cost of dealing with that material, spraying herbicides, when the landowner is amenable to it, and we generally recommend it, putting seedlings in the ground from our nurseries, planted in the ground, that work costs many thousands of dollars per acre. Right, it is a staggering amount of money that's required. It's exceedingly expensive. which is largely the reason why we think that the advent of these voluntary carbon markets and bringing private capital to provide a solution, right, funding upfront, is so material, absent which, as I said, lands will be converted and turned to brush. Carbon projects are successful, largely by the productivity of the ground. So in that ground north of Billings that you mentioned, where productivity is lower per acre, right? Like the timber, the board feet that ground could produce, and the ratio of carbon thereof is such that relative to, you know, like you mentioned Washington, right, which is obviously very fertile ground, if anything by virtue of the amount of precipitation in Washington, that means that we often have to work in partnerships with the state to tap into some grant funding opportunities to help stand a forest back up, just because otherwise it's not economical and we can't fund the work. But leaving that aside for a minute, yes, we are a for-profit entity, so we share in the carbon with the landowners. Having funded a long-term management endowment that will accrue interest to and go with the land, stay with the land, to allow a landowner to afford a pre-commercial fin at year 70 in that country, right? So we really care about long-term resilience and giving the landowner every resource possible to manage their land successfully for generations to come.
That must be incredibly difficult to model, because your timing right now, I mean, Canada is on fire, and the US knows that, because New York City, you know, even New York City is being smoked out by fires in British Columbia and Alberta. This was one of the longer fire seasons I've witnessed in my life. I mean, we had smoke down here in Billings from Canadian wildfires as early as May, which is very unusual. I mean, we kind of expect a smoky August, a smoky September, which right now as we record this, yeah, of course, there's definitely smoke in some areas. But as early as May, that's quite unusual. And there's millions and millions of acres in Canada burning right now. I don't know how you get ahead of that. This management plan, I do think some of our listeners are going to ask, does that include grazing and thinning and forest management?
So on the first point about wildfire smoke and folks on the East Coast, for years I've been, my wife's from the East Coast, so we spend a lot of time there, and I have been telling friends and family over there about the severity of the problem of our forests on national treasures in the Western United States, and too many people just didn't believe me, right? Thought that I was being hyperbolic. So when we go to New York, amongst other places, to raise capital to fund our projects, you know, our head of capital markets, my colleague Woolsey McKernan, was sitting in a boardroom on the 40th floor of a building, and just pointed out the window and see, you know, like, what more evidence do you need of the need for support for these landowners, both, you know, as well as for public lands, but private landowners across the world, the West, that are just losing everything. They're just, you know, as a partner of ours, the owner of the Sheep Creek Ranch in Cascade, Montana, said, his dream went up in smoke, and before, you know, we came along and started to work together, he didn't have very many options before him. But so it's real. And finally, hopefully that with your help, Coulter and others across the nation, we're able to kind of tell that story and amplify the need for investment. On the subject of grazing, you know, there are plenty of examples of landowners who use their ranches on a multi-use basis, right? So they lease their land out to outfitters, and they run cattle, and we're supportive of that. You know, it's our way of life in the West, and it's their land, so they should do as they please with it. We do work across the landscape and try and, you know, the seedlings do have to grow. So we have to, you know, maybe we have to put up some fences, virtual or otherwise, to keep the cows out for a period of time. But otherwise, you know, I'm personally very much in favor of multi-use ranching and grazing, and it keeps that vegetation down once the forest is mature. And then there's plenty of examples of grazing being beneficial when a forest is healthy and managed well, and there aren't too many trees per acre, cattle and otherwise can help to keep that vegetation down. That's good.
Well, what I really liked hearing from our last conversation, Arnu, is you can stack some of these benefits, some of these programs. So if I was enrolled in an NRCS program, and maybe that's even a conservation easement, I think you and I both share the value that we do not want to see these Western places chopped up and subdivided into 20s. That's certainly not a value of mine, development to rural subdivisions. For a quick flip of the dollar, especially in high markets like the last 3 years, that was really easy to do. So you could start with a conservation easement, maybe an NRCS EQIP program or CSP program, and you can layer it. Now you can, your program does not, it doesn't kick out those other options. It layers it like a cake of benefits and revenue on top of other enterprises, hunting, grazing, NRCS, conservation easement. It sounds like you can, you know, mast reforestation. And I think the appraisers listening and brokers as well would agree that, you're adding value when you reforest your burn scar. There's probably not a, currently in a hot market, there wouldn't be a huge difference between burned out places and a native intact forested ranch. But as the market comes back to normal, then there is. So if Mast were to come in with a nice program and reforest it, that's adding value to your principal. That's adding value to the underlying asset. And I like that. You guys do not, you're not prohibitive when it comes to other easements, correct?
We're not. So it's important to sometimes I struggle, you know, when chatting with landowners and my colleagues, speaking with landowners and promoting the benefits of conservation easements. You know, they're kind of, in some places you'll get run out of town, tarred and feathered, mentioning those words. But really, at the end of the day, they're an instrument that a land and the landowner holds the pen. It's their land, it's their easement. It's an instrument with which you commit to managing your land for the long term, for generations to come, that conforms with your vision, right? And more often than not, when you speak with landowners, and certainly brokers and assessors should resonate, whether they're Californians or Texans moving to Montana, or they're just people from Montana who've been there for generations, they want to preserve that Western way of life, right? So that easement helps to protect the land, but allows you to manage it for a multitude of outcomes. Our program seeks to provide the capital to restore the forest and habitat. And yes, we can layer on additional in the future, we believe will as this carbon market comes out of its nascency, we'll be able to layer on additional what we call natural capital revenue streams over and above our reforestation carbon program. But it's, you know, but you're conserving that land and allowing a landowner to, yeah, to also continue to generate income from grazing and from hunting leases and otherwise. It's important to note that we do not preclude a landowner from being able to carve out in their easement potentially a home building site, you know, as part of on their property. In fact, the only easement that we're that we need is on what we call the project area. So basically the forest that we have rehabilitated, right? So outside of the project area, because fortunately not all, you know, more often than not, the entirety of the project of the forest doesn't burn. Well, sadly, often that is the case, but in a lot of instances, it is not. And so the easement would conserve the acres that we have restored, but allow a landowner, should the timber markets come back, and Livingston's got a mill again, right? They'd be able to generate income also from the forest, maybe from some grain sales on the acres that haven't burnt. So yeah, so we, you know, we want to offer flexibility. We want to offer, you know, we've really thought long and hard about developing this program to address as many of those pain points that the landowners have faced, that they face after an event like a catastrophic wildfire.
So I get some questions on LinkedIn. I get a lot of pitches. People pitch me their ideas, which is awesome. Please keep doing that. And actually, we are moving the discussion to Discord. We've started a Ranch Investor Discord channel, and it is anonymous. So those who have questions for our new or myself, please jump on Discord, and you can post your questions or comments anonymously. And we definitely want to hear your feedback. One of the things that keeps coming up is, you know, people who listen quite often are entrepreneurial, and they're entrepreneurial land investors. And when you get entrepreneurial, you're always thinking arbitrage, right? We all want the quick flip arbitrage opportunity. And so hearing you, Arnu, I'm thinking, how fast can you move? Because if I go out and I solicit a landowner right after a burn, can you give me within 90 days, you know, a 60% confidence level that you can come in and do this project? Because then I'm going to start modeling that. Okay, I've got 60 days. I got this thing under contract. Can I put a conservation easement on it to take 20% of the value back to my pocket right away? Can I put NRCS? Can I get an outfitter in there to lease out the hunting? I'm going to start trying to maximize the value of this, optimize it as quick as possible. And I really like what Mast is pitching. What's your timeline? How long does it take?
That's great. Arbitrage is not a word we often use in forestry, but having spent a lot of years in finance prior to being called back to the woods, I like it. So we try and get our forestry team on the ground as quickly as possible after fire. If a landowner, and we urge landowners to get in touch with us as quickly as possible, and some are getting in touch with us now as fires are burning, you know, trying to look ahead, they understand the urgency. There's a lack of seed. There's a lack of seedling grow space in nurseries, and they want to make sure that they have that space that we'll reserve for them. So there is a level of urgency, and the faster we do it, the better it is for everybody. The faster we can, you know, get ahead of that competing vegetation and reduce that cost of reforestation per acre. Anyway, We try and get on the landscape correct within 90 days after fire, but as soon thereafter. We need a period of time to get our foresters on the land, and sometimes it's our team, sometimes we use local consulting foresters as well, who we partner with, like Zach Bashore of Montana Forest Consultants in out of Missoula. It was a great partner to go and make an assessment of the project's potential and the costs of doing the work, and then we present those findings to the landowner, and in some cases, landowners who have a deep love of the land and have maybe wanted to own their own, if they aren't already existing landowners, they've wanted to own their own corner of their own spot of the magic in the American West, have used those to inform their desire to purchase some forest. Our evaluation reports do not, I hasten to say, and should not be used as a way to underwrite investments into a forest. Our lawyers would be upset with me if I did say that. But yeah, we do provide a detailed evaluation of the land's reforestation potential, which is to say its carbon carrying capacity.
So another thought that just hit me, Arnu, as I'm listening to my own podcast, us sleazy salesmen, we'll sell anything, but we don't pimp out our network for free. And I'm thinking, all right, Arnu, you have thousands of dollars per acre invested in this, which means the net present value of all future benefit must be, I mean, it's probably 1.6 times that at least. You know, that could be a nice little commission. Are you guys doing any referral or any for my brokers and agents out there who have a network and can source leads for MAST? Is there anything where I could get compensated for pimping out my network?
Again, that's another word that we don't often use in forestry, but
pimping.
But yeah, but I should think twice about I'll take a new look at my truck, you know, pimp my ride and all that. very much so. So the reason why we partner with real estate brokers and folks across the West is that they're members of communities. They have the trust of their community members, right? So if I roll in to some place in Idaho or Montana or wherever across the West, and with my funny accent, people maybe, despite my love of recreation on the landscape, people may be slightly suspicious. And my colleagues have a lot of experience in standing forest back up, but still, right? So we like to work with folks across the West that can act as a bridge into communities and into regions. And we are happy to partner with them and incentivize them to bring us landowners with whom we can partner on restoring the landscapes. Absolutely. And we have those agreements in place, and be happy to share them with your network.
Okay, so now one reason people hate us sleazy brokers, Arnu, is because, well, there's many reasons, but the one I'm going to touch on is asymmetrical information. People generally do not like that, especially in non-disclosure states like Montana and Wyoming. People do not like that brokers hold the data. They hold the information. That's gold. That's how brokers run their business. And that's where brokers provide their value. So you have this agency problem, asymmetrical information. The broker knows more about the market, the marketability, the value of your place than the principal landowner. What I would see being an issue with MAST, if I'm in Northwest Montana and I've been there my whole, I haven't been there my whole life. I'm brand new and I don't know anything about forestry, but I know that I've got to do something about this burn scar. Is there an agency where someone would have my best interest in helping me understand what this carbon program entails, what the forestry, I mean, this forester out of Missoula comes in and he's talking about board feet and the growth rate and the diseases and the brush habitat. And I don't know a damn thing about forestry, but I know that this is a good opportunity. Well, I suspect it could be a good opportunity, but I have no information. Is there someone who could advocate for me?
Yeah, so I think I've answered your question, but sure, there are resources. You know, you mentioned the NRCS. They're a valuable member of the community. Resource conservation districts, our colleagues at the Bureau of Land Management and U.S. Forest Service and Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, who can provide support. But I'll say two things. The first is we are transparent, right? We present our findings to the landowner. We're here to answer questions. We have we invite our landowner partners to come and see projects where we've executed good work, where they can see trees growing and we have partners who would be happy to act as referrals. But also I'll say that our interests are aligned with those landowners, right? In having a successful project. We provide the capital at no cost to the landowner, and therefore our balance sheet is at risk, right? So if the project fails, we're on the hook, not the landowner. That should give landowners a sense of how committed we are to a project success. The relationship that we might have with a real estate broker or a consulting forester is one thing, but at the end of the day, we're partners with the landowner, and our commitment to the land and the landowner is truly what matters.
And just, I'm sure most listeners are aware this doesn't work everywhere. So I'm assuming you guys cannot do, or you haven't yet expanded into like hardwoods of northern Michigan. You're probably not going to do pine plantations of Florida and Alabama. It's probably locales specific, and I think we've touched on the wildlands aspect of it, native intact. But tell me specifically kind of what MAST is looking for right now. You guys have a war chest to go out and get this done. Where are you going to apply it?
So by virtue of the operating subsidiaries that we have, the verticals that we have, CalForest, Silver Seed, Drone Seed, those businesses have historically had a focus on the Western United States, right? So what, Rockies West, that's been our area of focus. We do have reforestation projects and trials going in British Columbia, in New Zealand. We do have demand for our services across the world. Old friend of mine from my finance days contacted me a couple weeks ago because of the devastation in Greece. But, you know, we are building this program carefully, and so yeah, our area of focus remains the Western United States, and we will expand cautiously with demand, but certainly, yep, hardwoods are a natural extension. The Southeast has incredibly productive ground, also face disturbances, hurricanes and otherwise. You know, I could see us moving in that direction at some point in time. But you know, as we said at the top, the count till last summer and this summer, we've burnt, sadly lost more ground, but as of the end of last summer, we'd lost 17.1 million acres in the Western United States alone in the last 10 years. So, like, we're not short of acres to reforest. So, you know, we remain committed to that mission, and we remain small but determined to make maximum impact.
So I don't want to get too much into your business, but I do have now a triggered burning question about the cost when you guys have to go out there and manually, using human physical labor, collect the seed. And granted, you've bought these nurseries, these seed businesses along the way, but still you're having to source localized genetics.
Yep.
That to me, I mean, in the Western US with the mountains and the slopes and the access, physical access, seems very, very costly. And as a business owner, I think a lot can empathize and commiserate right now that labor is just extremely difficult to find. How is it not that MAST is like, well, let's go to some flatter country. Let's go actually think about some fires that have torn through flatter areas. And why go after the West when it's so costly with the physical labor and the labor markets are difficult right now?
Well, on the flat versus steep, you know, we were a startup. Now we're a bit bigger than a startup, but we were a startup, and we're all entrepreneurs. And sure, you know, as you know, like the early days are steeped with challenges. That was a pun there, I guess. But and you know, our clients would give us just the steepest, rockiest, nastiest ground to work on, and we're not short of grit and a desire to succeed, and so we undertook those projects and have delivered some successes, a lot of lessons learned along the way, as you would expect from new burgeoning technology, but you know, we continue to invest and deliver on outcomes. On the subject of labor, we believe that carbon markets carbon markets allow us to make investments in our nurseries, in our seed collection programs, and so directly into rural communities across the West that need it most. And I have just countless examples of folks who work for our nurseries and our cone collection programs, where we've been able to make a material impact on their lives and on their livelihoods and their communities, because, you know, we're bringing this capital to make a difference. So there's definitely a social impact component to our work. That they've communities that used to have mills and that do not, but they're filled with people who have a love of the land, and they see their forests, right, their national forests burn up, and they want to make a difference, and so they come and apply for jobs, and we pay them well, and we look after them, we believe in our people, I think labor remains a challenge, but when you couple incentives and a desire to make, like, economic incentives, but also a desire to make a difference across landscapes, you know, we found that people love working for us.
Well, our new Dave Yeagis with Mast, and that's Mike Alpha Sierra Tango Mast, as well as Drone Seed. Check out some of their videos, pilot, or not a pilot project, but a case study of the Sheep Creek Ranch. I believe it's Sheep Creek. That's,
yeah, it is.
That's the one where I was actually out there as well, selling a little place nearby. Cool, very cool YouTube video showing your work. And definitely chime in with questions, comments anonymously on Ranch Investors Discord channel. We want to hear your feedback, but if you need some feedback and input from the audience, but a call to action from appraisers, brokers, and landowners.
The call to action, you said it, get in touch, reach out, and look to make a difference for on our Western landscapes. Like, we have the ability to act. It won't be easy, but we have the ability to restore landscapes and do good forestry work. Rooted in decades of experience and lessons learned and how to reestablish forests after catastrophic wildfires and other disturbances. And we're just looking for that engagement, you know. So yeah, you called out Mast and our website, mastreforest.com. We have myself and my teammates would love to chat with any of you directly.
Absolutely.
Anonymously or otherwise.
And Arnu would love to come out and see your place, because I'm sure Arnu, like me, I consider myself and Andy Ron, the sometimes co-host appraiser, we're land voyeurs. We like to just go look.
That's it.
We like looking. They're all beautiful.
That's it. You know, I don't know if this will be recorded, published as a video or a recording, but we are. The image in my here behind me is my backyard here, and also ravaged by wildfires. But anyway, we can do it. I really appreciate that's it. I'm in way up in the North California by the Oregon border. It's where our company Cal Forest is based, in Siskiyou County. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, Colter, and your audience. I appreciate that you share our passion for Western landscapes and forests. And thank you very much.
Pleasure having you on. I'm excited to bring on a group that has raised over $46 million. It speaks to the scale and size of the problem you are solving.
Yes, sir.
Well, Arnu, thank you again, and I hope to send along some comments and questions from Discord.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. All the best.
Click subscribe on your streaming platform so you know when the latest episode has dropped. Be the source of knowledge and the maven that other professionals are excited to refer.